Welcome to Confessing the Faith, a podcast devoted to discussions concerning Christian doctrine and the Christian life. My name is Mike Tizier, and I'm joined again today by Joe Anady. And we're talking about a really cool topic today. I mean, not that we don't talk about awesome topics every time, in my opinion, but I'm excited about this one because it's been something we've been passionate about as a church and something that we'll talk about more later, but is distinctive about Emmaus. We're talking about children in church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, it's a very important topic for us to discuss, and you used the word, Mike, that I was going to use. It is, I think, something that is it's a distinctive of Emmaus Christian Fellowship. We have a document in our foundation documents collection. We have a lot of foundation documents that just kind of define various aspects of the church. But there is a document called Emmaus Distinctives, and if I were to be completely honest, some of the things listed on there aren't terribly distinct. One of them is, for example, we are Reformed, and there are a lot of Reformed Christians. Another is we are Baptists, and what I mean by that is not that we are a part of a denomination, Baptist denomination, but that we believe in baptism for believers. And of course, we're not at all real. We're not unique in that regard. But one of the things listed there is that we are family oriented in our approach, and it does communicate this idea that we are doing church a little bit differently than I think most churches do. And it really is a distinctive. I would imagine that most churches still have what we would call a children's ministry or a children's church. Mm-hmm. The idea being that the corporate worship time is age segregated.
Right.
And we decided, it's probably been a couple of years ago now.
I think it's been
more attempt to move away from that model and to have
maybe it just feels like more, but yeah, it's been at least a couple of years.
Yeah, it feels like a long time to be in the worship service with us. So I think it needs to be addressed. Yeah.
So why do we need to talk about this topic?
Well, I think it is a distinctive, but I think it is also, quite honestly, a challenge for some who are coming into the church for the first time. You know,
yeah, definitely.
I see it as a potential barrier. You know, it can be kind of a difficult thing to get over in a couple of regards. One, I think that some folks come to the church expecting that there's going to be a full-blown children's ministry program. You know, that's just kind of the expectation. Of course, you have something for the kids, right?
That's been the standard that's kind of been set by most churches. And
yeah, for the last, 100 years, you know, almost. Well, yeah, probably about 100 years, I guess. And so when they come in and they see, oh, there's no children's ministry program, some have this initial response to that. Well, you don't care about our kids then, mm-hmm. right? Of course, from our perspective, it's exactly the opposite. It's that we do care deeply about the children. They think, well, now my kids in this church are going to miss out on something. And, of course, our opinion is exactly the opposite, is that they are missing out on something when we send them away from the corporate worship gathering. But that's something that needs to be addressed and overcome.
Right. And I think I've even heard this response, like, oh, well, when you grow as a church, maybe you're planning to add that, right?
Right. Like, well, the reality is we had it at the very beginning, and it was in terms of, as children's ministries go, it was functioning quite well. We have a lot of educators in our congregation and are completely able of staffing such a thing. But it was an intentional decision to move away from it, you know, not because we couldn't, but because we
even had check-in where we had little printouts.
We did. We had, the kids had labels on their back.
Yeah. Oh,
you know? It was fancy. I think that was probably a frustration, actually, the barcode thing, whatever. Anyway, so I think that needs to be overcome, that mindset. You know, someone comes to the church with a family. Some come to us because they heard we are taking this approach and they're looking for it. But there are others who come in and they go, what in the world? This church doesn't even have something for our kids. And that's troublesome to them. I think others, just the thought of having to manage their small children in a worship service overwhelms them too. So we get those difficulties. Yeah, for a single mom, for example, to walk in with three kids that are little, you know, it's hard. We're not denying that. You know, for a family, mom and dad there with a few little ones under the age of five or something. We get it that it's intimidating. We just have grown convinced that it's totally worth it to face those challenges, and that there's ways to remedy those challenges that don't involve send the kids out of the worship service.
Yeah. Well, what do parents need to know to help overcome those difficulties?
I think it's, first of all, just important for them to understand why this is important. So to understand the rationale behind it, you know, for us just to say, yeah, we don't do children's ministry, we don't do children's church, and then to leave it at that isn't very helpful, right? Why, you know? So the rationale needs to be provided, and I think it's very important for families to understand that rationale and to really believe that it's important, you know, to do church in this way. I don't suspect that a family would last very long at Emmaus if they're there and they're kind of struggling with their kids and it is difficult, it's hard to get them to church and they're squirrely in the service. I don't suspect they would last very long if they just don't really believe
right.
in the importance of having them there and putting in all of that effort required, right?
Yeah.
They're probably going to go find another place to worship where they have, you know, a children's ministry or children's church.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the rationale for having the children in the worship service. So what is that?
Yeah, a number of years ago we began to, well, actually I'd have to start many, many years ago. I mean, I was a youth pastor for a long time, first a junior high youth director, then a youth pastor full time. So I lived for, I don't know, 10 years in that world of, doing ministry with a very particular age group and having that age group segregated off from the rest of the congregation. I lived in that world. I worked closely with children's ministry directors. Over the process of time, I, even as I was working in that arena, began to notice some real difficulties, you know, some problems perhaps with that approach. But as we planted Emmaus Christian Fellowship, myself, other leaders began to study, you know, this issue. So why do we do this exactly? You know, where did this practice come from? And we began to look first and foremost to the scriptures, going, is it a biblical principle, you know, that we segregate the church in this way? And we grew convinced over time that, no, what you see in the scriptures is that the church is called to gather together, and it's to be a multi-generational experience, you know, where the older are to invest into the younger. I'm not really prepared to give a full-blown biblical, defense of this topic right now because I think it would take too long. But, you know, just for example, if you read Paul's epistle to the Ephesians, he writes to them, and in, I believe it is chapter 5, he begins to address different portions of that congregation, husbands, right? Wives, but he even addresses the children, you know, so there's something implied there. It is that as this letter is being read to the church, there are children who are present hearing this exhortation from the Apostle Paul, right? They're there in the presence and they're being exhorted to honor their parents, you know, and to respect them according to the scriptures. And I think can just be argued that throughout the history of redemption, we see this emphasis upon a multi-generational experience in worship, this emphasis upon the responsibility of the family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere certainly do we see any explicit teaching suggesting that we ought to have our worship experiences segregated in any way, you know, according to race, according to gender, according to age either. And so that is our primary concern, is to do church according to the scriptures, and to really have the people of God, young and old, come together in this worship experience. Yeah,
I remember when we were going through this topic a little bit more in depth at a leadership retreat, we read a book, and I do not remember the title of that book.
Well, there were a number of books we read.
Yeah, there was one particular we were discussing that day, and I don't remember it.
There was a book called A Weed in the Church.
That's what it was.
Just fair warning here. We didn't come away from this study agreeing with everything in every book
right,
we read.
But
Go ahead. Yeah.
I just remember this thought being the centerpiece of just what kind of helped me get through that too. Just why are we doing what we're doing? Like,
right.
Let's get back to that question. because it's something we've been done, but we've done for so long. Like the church we came out of, that's what we were doing. A lot of churches around us, that's what they do. And I'm saying what they do is the children's ministry, and at the same time, it's the worship service. And so it's not. We kind of just forgot to ask that question. Well, let's. Why are we doing that in the first place? And
yeah,
that's the important question.
Well, isn't it interesting that we see it as like the norm? Mm-hmm. In our culture,
yeah.
to have the children and the youth off somewhere else during the worship service. I think in some churches, it's, you know, you're not allowed to bring your kids in here, right? Because we're afraid they're going to be disruption. So that's just kind of the norm. But then you begin to look, you see, it hasn't always been this way.
Right.
In fact, if you study church history, you find it's a very modern and new concept. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to the 1900s, the family came to church together. Right.
Yeah.
They prepared for church together. They came to church together. They sat through church together. They went home together. That was the model. And we just do certain things and we assume it's always been this way. But to dig a little bit, you might find out that no, this is a more of a modern and novel concept.
Right. And what are the benefits? Let's say, because there are a ton, but what are the benefits of having children in the corporate worship service with the adults?
Yeah, well, can I address some of the consequences first, too? And that's a way to get at this,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
But we start with the scripture. What do the scriptures say? But also, I think after we began to really look at the church in America today, right, we go, you know what? Youth pastors are well-intended. I was one, right? children's ministry directors are well-intended. I know that pastors who serve in church, they're well-intended. I get that. I'm not calling into question people's motives here. But it is interesting that the evangelical church in America is always kind of scratching their heads going, what's going on here? Why is it that our children are growing up and they're turning 18, 19, 20, going off to college or whatever, moving on with life, and they leave the church. You know, we have this crisis, you know, and I always see it written about in publications.
Yep.
We have this crisis. Why are they leaving the church? And I've come to believe that one of the reasons that they're leaving the church is because they never were a part of it growing up.
They were part of an isolated.
They were part of something else.
Yeah. And it's usually done totally different too.
Well, right. So you think about what goes on, and even well done children's ministries, right? Even where there is substantial teaching and stuff.
Yeah.
They're not taking part in the activities of the church, the worship of the church. They're doing something else.
Yeah.
Same could be said about the approach with our junior hires and high schoolers typically when we send them off. You know, and so it's no wonder then that when they turn 19 or 20, I mean, and what do some churches do? Well, let's create a college group.
Yep.
So what do you have to do? You just have to bump this up one more level, you know, to still appeal to this this demographic who are expecting something catered to them, right, in isolation from the broader body of Christ. And then in churches that are devoted to a model like this, after college – a college group is ended, you know, the time has come to move on from that. Then you have young singles or young marrieds, and it just goes on forever and ever and ever, you know, segregated in this generational way. I think for us, and please hear me, I'm not trying to really criticize those who are devoted to this other model. I know you're well-intended. I know good things come out of it. I'm not calling that into question, you know, as if I'm saying it's all bad. But for us, the more we thought about these things, we said, you know what? It may be that there are unintended consequences associated with this model that we've grown so used to, right? And that actually our children and our youth are missing out on an awful lot that they could be exposed to if they were just in the service with families.
I mean, there's a lot of old side notes we could go on with this, but just that they're out there, I mean, a lot of youth ministries, and again, this is a blanket statement, so obviously this isn't going to be attributed to every youth ministry, but, you know, when you dumb down the content of whatever it is, or the environment, the atmosphere of whatever, of what you're trying to get across to these kids, so let's go to high school, for example, a lot of youth groups tend to focus on entertaining. You know, we want to get them engaged and have them pay attention. And so we tend to dumb down this message to be, it's about having fun, and then also we're going to learn about God. And that treating kids as if they're younger than they are, or you know, it's the opposite of what we want to be doing, right? We want to be treating people like they're older than they are. Because
calling them to maturity,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
The issue here.
Yeah.
I think it's true. I mean, and the fear is, well, then we'll lose them. How do you know?
Yeah.
It's not my experience.
Yeah.
It's just not. Prove it. I would say a lot of young people, especially if the Lord is authentically moving upon their hearts, they're desiring substance.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Prove it. That's what I would say. I think the church has done quite well throughout church history, with that older traditional model of families worshiping together. I think we're actually robbing them of something very important when we send them out constantly from the corporate worship gathering of the church. Yep. What are the benefits was the question you asked of having children in the corporate worship service with the adults? Well, I think, first of all, they experience what it is to be a part of the church. And it's a huge benefit, and I just alluded to the problem of not allowing this, right? They don't know what it is to be a part of the church, so they find it very difficult to jump in at age 18 or 19. But I think it's just important for them to be saturated in the church, you know, to know what it is to interact with people older than them and to know what it is to listen to a sermon and so on and so forth, right? It's there that they hear the word preached from a young age, you know, from even age two or three, they're listening to sermons, you know, and they're just getting used to what that is. They're singing songs of truth. My little niece, the other day, I think my mom was watching her, and she was out in the living room. My mom was in the kitchen, and she overhears her singing Rock of Ages, right? Cute little thing, little blonde girl, you know, and she's just out there singing rock. I'm not going to try to imitate her. It'd sound horrible, but, you know, that wonderful hymn that I love so much as well, but she's just there singing it. She learned, and she's, how old is she? I don't know.
She's two.
She's two, right?
Yeah.
Same age as
my son. Yeah,
as your son.
Son, yeah.
2 years old, and she's singing this hymn. I think also what they do is they see the Lord's Supper administered for us now. It's week after week. They may not be partaking of the Lord's Supper if they have not yet been baptized, right? But they're watching. They're watching, and they're understanding something about the symbolism that is there being communicated through the supper. In fact, I know for us with our children, the observation of the Lord's Supper has provoked so many wonderful conversations with my kids. You know, when can I take it, Daddy? Or what does it mean? What does it symbolize? You know, when can I be baptized? I mean, it brings all this stuff to the forefront. Mm. So it's so beneficial. Even if they're not partaking of it, they're seeing it there symbolized before them,
and they're reminded that that's a goal to get to, like to grow to maturity, to achieve something,
right?
You know, that
right.
Yeah.
And for those who are who have made a credible profession of faith and who've been baptized, they're partaking of it with the church. That's very significant, by the way. I mean, Christ has commanded us as a church to come together, to assemble together, and He's given us this sacrament, this ordinance to observe. We believe, and we're practicing it this way weekly, you know, as a way of feasting upon Christ. So when we send our children off to children's ministry or to youth ministry or whatever we want to call it, we're barring them from that. We're putting them away from that, right? I doubt, or I don't think it should happen, but I doubt that the Lord's Supper is being observed in those contexts. It shouldn't be, right? So they're actually being barred from the supper.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we don't do that on purpose, but that's the unintended consequence of this, right? They enjoy fellowship with young and old. It's wonderful for me to see older folks in our church engage with the young ones.
Yeah.
It's great. That's an important skill for them to learn, how to look an adult in the eye and have a conversation, to learn how to shake someone's hand. You know what I mean? That's important stuff. They're involved in the prayer. What I'm trying to get at here is essentially that our young people, by being involved in the corporate worship service with the adults, are being exposed to the means of grace every Sunday. And what's happening is that they, even as very young children, are being called to faith, they're being called to repentance by the means of grace that Christ has ordained. They're hearing the word, they're participating in fellowship, they're participating in prayer, and they're at the very least observing the supper, right? Watching it being observed, or they themselves are partaking. They're being exposed to the means of grace, and they're being called continually to faith and repentance by them. So if they have not yet made a credible profession of faith, they're being called to it. there may be faith authentically in their heart even before they can make a credible profession. I understand that. But if there is real faith there, then they're being called to walk in that and to be strengthened in it continuously. You know, here's probably a verse that those devoted to children's ministry and youth ministry would quote. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for such belongs the kingdom of heaven." I think that's probably a great motto verse for a children's ministry or youth ministry program. And that's how they would respond to all this, saying, don't hinder the little children from coming to Jesus. And what I would want to say is, that's our verse. That's exactly what we're saying. Where is Christ? Well, he is present in his church. We are the body of Christ. And so do not hinder the children from coming and participating with Christ through his body, which is manifested in not only the universal church, but the local church as the saints assemble together. That's what the word church means, ecclesia, the assembling, right? So as the saints assemble together, let the children come and be a part of that, and in so doing, experience that union with Christ, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the benefit of it, right, is we're bringing them along. We are allowing them to be exposed to the means of grace, and we're just preparing them for a lifetime in the church is what we're doing by exposing them to it and allowing them to be a part of it from a young age.
Yeah.
What about the concern that children cannot understand what is being taught in the worship service?
Again, I would just say prove it. You know, it's such a common accusation. Well, they can't understand anything. Not my experience at all. It's just not. I get it. A 3-year-old cannot grasp what a 15-year-old or a 50-year-old will grasp. I'll admit that. But you would be so surprised at what a 3-year-old does grasp.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. You'd be really surprised at what a 10-year-old grasps. You know, I mean, it's amazing. They learn so much in the corporate worship service, even when the sermon is directed towards mainly those who are of adult age. They pick up on a lot. I think they learn through observation and experience, too. You have to remember that though, you know, 50% of the words might be over their head during the sermon, they're learning something just because they're there and they're watching. They're learning what it is. They're learning the importance of being there, right? They're learning about what the church is just by looking around the room and observing what goes on from Sunday to Sunday. They're learning through the songs. We do engage them, by the way, in age-specific teaching during the service. It's very brief, but we bring them up to the front at Emmaus for a little bit of catechism instruction. This is right after, like, our first worship through song segment, you know, and right before the sermon. But it gives the kids a chance to get their wiggles out a little bit. They come up, they sit on the front row. And then right now it's Phil who does the teaching primarily. And he introduces the catechism question for the week. And he teaches to their level, kind of. I will admit that even here it's kind of geared towards adults also. It's almost the time to expose the parents and the adults to the catechism and to give a little insight there. But he is. He's addressing them. I think they learn through the symbolism of the Lord's Supper. After all, that is what the Lord's Supper does, is it preaches the gospel to us, but through visible means. You know, so they see the body of Christ broken and the blood that was shed for us symbolized there in the sacrament. And again, they do learn from the sermon. We provide for them an active listener guide each week, and it's very basic. It's a place for them to take notes or to draw pictures. You know, we try to encourage them to draw pictures about the sermon. Sometimes I find pictures of machine guns and stuff like that. Oftentimes I find, you know, but they're doodling. That's fine. But in the active listener guide, what I do is I always provide a very basic outline for the sermon. Very simple, with the fill in the blank thing for the kids. And it's there up on the screen for them to copy down. Or I'll put keywords or phrases. I'll list them and they're to check every time they hear them, just trying to keep them engaged. For some of the kids, it's probably not that effective. For others, they're really into,
you know, getting every answer right and making a check every time they hear a word of prayer. So, I mean, we're doing that. We're engaging them in that regard. Sometimes I directly address them in the sermon to, you know, and kids or youth. This is for you. But they are learning from the sermon, and especially when parents begin to reinforce these truths after church, you know, in the car on the way home or at home. It is really the parent's job or the guardian's job to take what was ever taught and to kind of digest it a bit and to give it to the children, you know, in a way that is a bit more appropriate for them and age specific, right? And I was just talking to someone this past Sunday who it was at our baptism and we were sitting outside and having a conversation. He was just rejoicing over all the wonderful questions his kid asks him after church on Sundays. You know, Dad, Joe was saying that there's one God who eternally exists in three persons. The Father, you know, he didn't use this language. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. How can that be? Isn't that a wonderful thing that our kids are picking up on something and they're asking? I mean, that might be intimidating for some to have to talk about that, but that to me, that's great.
Yeah,
that's tremendous.
Yeah.
So it's true they're not going to catch everything, but again, we're calling them to maturity, and it should be that there are things that are said that they don't get, and they're going to bring those things up, you know, as they interact with the church and hear sermons week to week, and that'll give parents and guardians an opportunity to address them.
Yeah, I think that goes on to continually encourage parents to do family worship, because you know the kids are asking questions, or you're wanting to reinforce the teaching, as you just said. That implies that need to be doing that at home.
And
I think that's a beautiful thing that we might miss out on, not realizing that, sending kids to their own service during the service. And that's really the key, because we're not about, like, we're as we'll talk about later, it's not about teaching kids age specifically. It's about keeping the whole church together.
Maintaining the unity of the church.
Right.
But you're right, Mike. I mean, listen, we gather together on the Lord's Day. It's the first day of the week. When we say when we sing the doxology and say the benediction, it doesn't mean, all right, everything's done here. Well, really what it means is, okay, now it's time for you to go and to discuss this further and to apply this to your lives as adults and as families. Yeah, take whatever it is that you hear on a Sunday and discuss it with your children in the home. That's what we're encouraging.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, not that this is true of every children's ministry or every youth ministry, but maybe typically what happens is that, yeah, you kind of outsource the responsibility of teaching your children the faith, don't you? You know, you send them off to get the instruction, and there might be very little continuity between what is happening in the Sunday school or the children's ministry and in the home. Right. I would imagine that some churches do this better than the others, where they do really try to encourage involvement with the parents. And that's wonderful. You know, that's good. But in my experience, it's kind of like the kids walk out with something they've colored or some craft they made. And that's kind of the extent of it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see much else. So you're not interacting on deeper levels than that. And that's the idea, is that parents would be involved, guardians would be involved. And if there's no parent or guardian, then that others in the church who are kind of serving as in that role in some young person's life would be involved in helping the young one to grasp the faith.
Does Emmaus offer anything that is specifically designed for children and youth?
Yeah, for a while now, I'm evidently bad at remembering how long things have been going on, but for a while now, we've had a youth service at in our home. Lindsay and I have opened up our home on Thursday night, and we have middle schoolers come. And that's been wonderful, you know. So we're not opposed to age-specific instruction. We really do believe that it is the church's responsibility to teach. That's one of the church's responsibilities. And pastors are obligated to teach, not just those who are in adulthood, but also the younger, you know, that responsibility is there. There are some movements within this, like, family integrated, family oriented type model who I think go too far in what they do is they say never should the pastor instruct directly to the child or to the youth. It always has to be through parents. And I think that's going too far because, in fact, the pastor is to shepherd young and old, male and female, rich and poor, right? And so we see that responsibility exists. And so, yeah, Lindsay and I, we have youth over to our house. And what do? We go over the catechism for that week. We have kind of a structure to that where we move through the catechism every couple of years. And so we go over that. We talk about the sermon from the previous Sunday. Sometimes that's a real joyful experience for me where they remember a lot. Other times I have to drag it out of them, I'll admit. But it's still, it's a connection back to that corporate worship time that we had. It's good. And we're going through a book right now, a book by R.C. Sproul called Essential Truths of the Christian Faith. It's a great study, a systematic study of the scriptures. And I love it. It's great. And it's a time for me to kind of break the stuff down a little bit more and to help them apply it on a level that makes sense to them. Also, we decided a bit ago that we would like to develop a Sunday school for children. And you might hear that and go, well, that's odd. I thought you were just talking about moving away from that model. It's totally different what I'm saying here. Historically, this has been a traditional thing that Sunday school would be offered for both adults and children prior to the corporate worship service of the church that is unified, completely unified. And we would like to move towards that.
We're currently doing that for adults.
We're currently doing it for adults. We call it Emmaus Essentials. More and more I'm using the lingo of Sunday school, just kind of more widely accepted language. You know, people know what you're talking about typically. And what do we do there? We go through essential issues of the Christian faith. You know, we study eschatology. We study the doctrine of Scripture. We study the doctrine of the church or the doctrine of God and whatever, just a variety of subjects. And I think, yeah, it would be great for our little ones to have some systematic instruction, too, that is really geared towards them. But what's the point? The point is that they get it, and then we come together for worship so that they really are participating in the life of the church, even from a young age. That's the issue. We don't want to violate the unity of the church. But we do believe that age-specific instruction can be given. Now, when we do that, we've had many conversations about this as a leadership team, as an elder team. Anything we do in that regard, we want it to be done in such a way where it is closely tied to the work that the parents are doing in the home. It's not undermining it, but it's supplementing it. It's not undermining it, but it's encouraging it, right?
Right.
In fact, just to illustrate how we've done this with our youth, okay, the youth come on Thursday night having been prepared by their parents. So it is expected that in the home they've worked on the catechism. In the home they've talked about the sermon from the previous week to some extent. Some review has taken place. And in the home they've read the chapter from Sproul's book, you know. So when they come on a Thursday night, it's kind of their second exposure to these things.
Right.
Sometimes third. You know, they heard it on Sunday and they've talked about it with their parents. And so that's the idea. Again, we're not saying, here, give us your kids so that you can outsource the responsibility of raising them in the faith. But we're saying, here, we are the church. I'm a pastor. And our desire is to teach and to disciple, to instruct. Let us help with that. Let us supplement it and let us do our part.
And it gives them the opportunity to interact with others their age, too, in
sure.
that context. So.
Yeah, and especially middle school and high school, I think that's important because what is our goal, of course? It's to bring these children into adulthood. And so they do need to learn how to interact with peers. And it's also important. We have to acknowledge this. Middle schoolers and high schoolers do face challenges that are unique to that age.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about your teenage years, right? There's unique challenges there. And so it's good for them to be able to, I think, interact
yeah.
on their level
yeah.
about those things. Yeah. And, one more thing on this point. We also have decided and we're resolved in this regard that those who are involved with the teaching of children or youth, they need to be qualified.
Right.
equipped to teach. The idea here is that when we do start our Sunday school for children, I'm not sure how long it'll take to get that going, but hopefully not too long, it's going to be primarily elders who teach it. You know, I'm excited for our elders to have that opportunity. I think they're going to love it. I'm excited for the kids, you know, one more opportunity for them to get to know the leadership of the church, the elders, and to benefit from their teaching. I would imagine the day would come where there will be others who will be involved in the teaching, but they'll need to be inspected, approved, also trained, equipped.
Background checked.
Background checked. Yeah. No, but, you know, we have like a license to preach process at Emmaus. Yeah. That if someone from the church is going to preach, there's a process to that. It's not, oh, you have something to share, get on up there, brother. You know? No, there has to be some sort of process here to where the individual is, you know, we lay hands on them. We commission them to that task.
I think that's super important. For the people, for the person actually doing that preaching too, that's been licensed, that's a huge, like, hey, we're behind you and teaching. But it's also just this, you know, hey, to the people and to the parents that are having their kids taught. It's like, they're allowed to.
Yeah.
There's been some standard that's been, or a list of standards that have been met and achieved. So.
I don't know. It makes me tremble a bit to think about what sometimes happens in children's ministry, right?
Yeah.
It really is more of a, okay, we've done a criminal background check. And you've passed.
Well, yeah, and I said that as kind of a joke, but it's, but yeah.
But it is. You've passed that, therefore, you're in charge of this group of children. Okay. Yeah. Now, if it's just childcare,
that's one thing.
But if it's instruction, so now what are we doing? We're outsourcing, perhaps, to the church, as parents. You teach my children faith. That already is a bad move. But then we're outsourcing to what? You know, what's the curriculum? What is actually having crafts, or is there instruction? And then if there's instruction, who's the one who's teaching it? Mm-hmm. Do they have sound doctrine? Or, you know, and our tendency is to say, well, it's just the kids. What?
Right.
It's just the kids. Right? I think it's the kids. It better be those who we know have sound doctrine and who have the ability to teach. I would actually argue it's more difficult to teach children than adults.
Yeah.
Because here we have these incredibly important and deep, rich truths that we want to give to them, but you have to be able to explain it in a way that they can understand. If you write it, that's hard. I think if you teach the Trinity to a 5-year-old, you can teach the Trinity about the Trinity to an adult, right? Mm. Okay. So. Right. I think, again, just to make that point, it's okay for the church to engage children and youth in an age-specific level. It's good. Not undermining the parents' authority, not undermining the parents' responsibility, and also doing so in a way that's responsible and careful. Not saying it's just the kids, but, man, it's the kids.
Yeah.
So we better do this well.
Let's talk about the practical issue of managing young children in the worship service.
Yeah.
What can parents do to succeed in this?
That's really what I wanted to get to today. So if you're kind of new to Emmaus maybe and you're listening to this, I guess the first part of it has been trying to convince you of the importance of family being together in worship, right? The rationale. This, I guess, is addressing a little bit more of the practical issues. I get it, that it can be intimidating. So you have a church, you walk into a church, especially if you're new to it, and it's a kind of a sacred time. It is a sacred time, right? And it can be kind of a terrifying thing. You have 2 or 3 kids on your hip, and you're just wondering, when are they going to blow? You know, when are they going to just start going nuts? When are they going to lose it? And so I get the fear here. The first thing I need to say is probably – you should come to church with realistic expectations, okay? First of all, you need to know that our expectation is not that the children would be completely silent. I think some parents just come in all wound up because here they are assuming that we're going to be ticked if the kids make a peep.
Right, and they'll get judgmental stares from the congregation or whatever else.
Yeah, just trust me. When we decided to go this route, we were realistic in it. We knew that it would be a different kind of church experience in that there's going to be noise. There's going to be rustling. There's going to be cries. There's going to be some chatter. And we determine that the one who's preaching is going to have to get over that and learn to focus through it. And the congregation as a whole is going to have to buy into it and learn to focus even through some background noise.
And if we're all honest with ourselves, that's the kind of noise we experience in everyday life anyway.
It is.
So.
Yeah. So that's our expectation. Yeah. It's not that the kids would be absolutely silent, but that there would be a little bit of commotion. There's a limit to that.
Yeah.
There is. I mean, you, I think most people just intuitively kind of get it when it's crossed the line. I need to walk out, you know. Mm. I suppose it's kind of subjective, right? Where is the line on that?
Yeah.
But we've never had to address that with anybody, right, saying, you know, hey, you know, your kid shouldn't be thumping the person in front of them on the back of the head the whole story. You know, we've never had to do anything like that. People just get it. The kid's fussy for a little bit. They give it a little bit of time. But if it's clear that this isn't coming to an end, you know, and the crying's only going to get louder, the parents naturally know it's time to get up and walk out of the service and to go into the toddler center area that we have and to listen to the sermon on the speaker or whatever. But you need to come in as a parent with that expectation that the children are going to be a little bit restless. That's okay. And that helps a lot just right there, because I think a lot of the pressure people feel, you know, is unwarranted from the beginning. I think it's also incredibly important. And if I were to emphasize any point being made here, it's this one: prepare for worship ahead of time. You've got to prepare ahead of time. If you're trying to teach your children how to behave in church on the fly, in the middle of this, you know, second point of a 3-point sermon, it's not going to go well. You can't instruct them. You know what I'm saying? That's not the time for it. So you have to prepare for worship ahead of time. And what I mean by that is you should explain to your children beforehand what worship is and why it's important. I mean, sit them down and have a talk, not an angry talk, right? But just a talk. Okay, son or daughter, we're going to go to church tomorrow. And it's important, isn't it, that we worship God? And so when we get there, here's what you're to do. I want you to work on singing when the songs are being sung. And during the sermon, you need to be quiet. You know, it's not time to go to the bathroom. It's not time to get a drink of water. We want to be respectful to those around us. You see, so it's a preparation that's being made here. And I wonder if parents fail to do that, you know. And so here the kids are acting up a bit and doing things they shouldn't do, but the kids don't know they shouldn't do those things, perhaps, because they've never been taught. We learned early on it's important for us to bring proper supplies with us to church. We have what we call the Bible bag, you know. It's in our front closet, and it's a collection of not only their Bibles, but notebooks and pens and stuff like that. So we just took the time to think, okay, what do we want them to have? And we would need to make sure that we have it there with us. We need water with us at church, too. That's always an important thing because they get thirsty. We also learned early on, the first few weeks that we were doing this, that it's possible to bring way too much, you know. So bring things that will help make it through the service. But when you start bringing too much stuff, that becomes a problem also.
Like what is too much?
Well, just – okay, so if I remember right, we had one of those boxes that had a bunch of crayons and pencils in it, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Okay. That thing's noisy. That thing gets kicked over. That thing spills. And then the kids start talking, pass me the purple one. Or, you know, it just I remember it creating all sorts of problems. What do they need? A pencil. So that's just an illustration. You know, don't bring their toy chest because that's probably going to be problematic. But something to help them get through the service maybe would be a good idea. I think also getting to church early is very important, because then you're able to help them settle, right? You're able to say, hey, go to the bathroom and come back, so you're not asking me to go during the service. So that's super important. Get to church early. Also, it just helps. I mean, if the whole family's frantic, everyone's yelling at each other, rushing out the door, everyone's angry and uptight, and you run into church right as the opening prayer is going on after the announcements or something. You're trying to find a seat. I mean, how do you think the service is going to go? So it's not that difficult. You know, the church service starts at 10 o'clock. Come at 9:45. Come at 9:30. Walk in calmly. Take them to the restroom at 9:50. Come back and get your seat. And there's more of a calm, settled sort of thing. Give them final instructions at the time. Hey, remember, this is what we're going to do. Right. I think that's important. I have here also have them use the restroom before the service. I've already said that like five times, so it's probably important. That said, without fail, man, we'll send our kids to the restroom and still they'll be over there like looking at us like they're about to die, you know, because they got to go again. Okay. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But, yeah, it's about preparation. Pray with them. So communicate them to them the sacredness of the time. Pray that the Lord would bless the worship service, that God would be glorified, that the people would learn. That has an impact upon their heart over time. And I think it's important to establish these expectations that I've been talking about and consequences associated with breaking those expectations. So I know this isn't what everyone wants to hear, but you got to parent. You got to discipline lovingly, patiently. But this is a time for them to learn how people are to obey, to behave in a setting like this. You know, so let me give you an example from my family, okay? just to be clear, we have good Sundays, we have bad ones. We have four kids. Right now, their ages 12, 11, almost 10, and, well, I guess they're all about to have their birthdays. Anyways, 12, 11, 9, and 7, okay? 12 and 11, we're good. If we have problems with them, yeah, we got issues, right? They're doing well. 9-year-old, doing pretty good. Still, we get the issue of a panicked look. I got to go to the bathroom or something like that. 7-year-old, God bless him. We love him. But he can make life difficult sometimes, right? So my wife, it's fun. It's really fun preaching, actually. And I don't look. They always sit off to my left. And I don't make eye contact, but I can sense when my wife's having a bad day with the kid. You just, there's movement over there, you know. And just kind of repetitive things, you know, just the same mistakes being made over and over again. Our youngest needing to use the restroom twice during the service and poking at my wife, you know, on her arm or something, or trying to talk to his sibling or whatever. And so, you know, here's the deal. These are the expectations, and here's the consequence. If you need to use the bathroom, okay, but it's going to cost you an hour in your room when we go home from church. Every trip to the bathroom costs you an hour in your room. So it's your decision, right? It's amazing all of a sudden it's not so urgent, you know. Because I think what it was is he just wanted to get up and move around. Okay, it wasn't so much that he really had to go. But, you know, expectations and consequences. So a trip to the bathroom is going to cost you an hour in your room. And, yeah, there are emergencies, but you should have went ahead of time and on you go. For you to get into a bickering match with your sister in the middle of the church service is going to cost you 3 hours in your room, right? That's just how we're going to do it. And so far that's helped a lot because that little word can be spoken to the child in the middle of the service, right? But you got to, okay, it's going to cost you an hour. And then you see them thinking about it. Never mind, right? And so I think that's important. What are the expectations? What are the consequences? Right. And then we need to follow through on those consequences, follow up with the kids after the service. If they've broken the rules, there need to be those consequences that are actually delivered. So you're not just full of hot air. But also, how did it go in church today? What did you hear? What did you learn? How was the behavior? And then you talk about it. You don't blow up at your kids. You don't get angry. But just week after week, consistently discuss these things. And there's going to be progress over time. There's going to be progress over time. And, you know, again, prepare ahead of time. You need to prepare on Saturday night. Get them to bed at a reasonable hour. Pray for the worship that's going to take place on the Lord's Day. Wake up in a reasonable hour. Get to church on time. Talk about what's expected. Follow up afterwards. And also throughout the week, have these discussions. You alluded to it earlier, Mike, and I think it's huge. One way to help your children develop the ability to sit still for a period of time is to do family worship in the home. you know, teach them what it is to pay attention to something for 5 minutes, if they're real little, and then for 10, and then for 15 or something over time. You know, I can still remember with Damon, this was years ago when we first started doing worship in this way. I mean, it was challenging. I'll admit it. He was squirrely as heck. The way we made progress with it was, in addition to the other things I've already said, was to just sit down a couple of times a week and to be real still and to read a passage of scripture or to read some other book too, by the way. This works too, to where he needs to be in one spot for 10 or 15 minutes. And it's there in that environment that you could really instruct and really teach that discipline, right? So I think family worship is important. You can practice these things there. Also, think about where you are sitting in the sanctuary and how your kids are situated in relation to one another. We've learned there's a certain pattern that works. There's a certain pattern that doesn't work. I usually don't get to sit right next to my wife in the worship service because we need to be between the children, you know. It may be that the back's good for you because your kids are at that age where you might need to make a rapid escape. It might be that up front would be better because you're seeing that things are pretty much under control, but it would help them to engage in the service more, right? Mm. Just think about all those things. Partner with other people too. So I brought up the issue earlier. What about the single mom who's walking in with three kids on her hip? How's the church going to address that situation, Joe? Well, our hope would be that others within the church would love to come alongside and say, hey, could I help you? Right?
Yeah.
Can we sit with you? And maybe divide up the children a little bit and help to get you through the service. So partner with other people. Consistency is the key. Someone was explaining to me the other day, I mean, really spotty in attendance. I mean, once every month or 6 weeks. You know, Joe, I'm frustrated about the kids. And my response is, well, one of the best things you can do is just be there Sunday after Sunday and work on these things. They're not going to get better at it unless they're consistently in church and consistently being instructed in these things week after week, right? A couple more things I'd like to say on this. One, because it is important, I would hope that you would be willing to be distracted for a little while for the sake of your children.
Yeah, that's good. It's an important one.
So I'm looking at you and Jana, right? You got...
So yeah, we have a 2-year-old and a 9-month-old.
2-year-old, 9-month-old, okay. There's a bunch of people at Emmaus who are in that boat right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see it.
And I'm up during songs and stuff, because so it's just Jana and the two kids. And we're huge with, I mean, we're partnering with people. We're an example of that. So we have people help us, so, but yeah.
Yeah, and I see a lot of parents in this boat where they're up and down, you know. They're having to sometimes go outside for a minute or go to the toddler center and come back. And
yeah, yeah.
I get it. Like, you probably long for the day where you could just sit and sing and listen to a sermon. And that's it. Right? And that day's coming.
Yeah.
But when they're real little, I think it's worth the investment. I think because of the reasons stated above, the importance of this issue, it's worth the investment to be a little bit distracted for a period of time. Also, by the way, people can work on their ability to concentrate even with commotion.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a skill that's learned, you know. It's possible to, on the one hand, be kind of wrestling your kid a little bit and to still have an ear bent towards the sermon, right? Not all people are very good at that, but I think it can be worked. It can be cultivated. It can be worked on. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, we were talking about this earlier, but even in my 2-year-old, I see stuff in him that he observes just in the – you know, because he does go in the toddler center for a while most of the time, you know, most Sundays. But it's even in the short time that he's not there, you know, while you're preaching or something, there's things that he observes. He's seeing us looking at you, or he's seeing, you know, other adults. Like, I think I'm convinced that he's noticing those things. And I mean, even at his younger age, you know, that's going to have an impact on him, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. We've mentioned the toddler center a couple of times, and I just realized we didn't really explain what that is. We do have a little place in the library. We meet at a school. So in the library, there's like a nice mat there and a little fence, you know, a little cage for and some toys. Well, what's that all about? Well, we've decided that and we've also staffed it. We do have volunteers who are willing to watch the kids in there each Sunday, ages 1.5 to 3.
To 3, yeah.
Okay. The idea is this. If they're younger than 1.5, they probably need mom and dad. Okay, so mom and dad, if they have to, can take them in there themselves and sit with them and listen to the sermon on a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But 1.5 to 3, as I think about that, I mean, that's a tough age because it's hard to reason with the little ones.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're mobile. They're walking pretty good. They're squirrely, and it is kind of hard to reason with them, you know.
Yeah.
So we are willing to flex a little bit here and to understand that as a practical. I mean, they're real young. They're not understanding a whole lot, and they are hard to reason with.
Right.
So we do have the toddler center available for them. But the idea is that by age 3, you know, and our hope is actually that parents, if they desire, wouldn't even make use of it if they desire to just keep the kid in the service all the time. That's fine, too. But we do have that little source of a relief there. I will also say the sermon is typed in on a speaker. I've never had to sit in there and try to listen to the sermon on a speaker, right? I'm always the one preaching.
It works.
Yeah, okay. Totally. I think sometimes there's a lot of commotion in that room.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, what's going on in there.
Depends on the day. But it's there. It's an attempt. Yeah. Also, we're working on being able to live stream the sermon online.
Yep.
I think that could be even more helpful because if we get that done, it would be possible for someone to be live streaming the service on their cell phone. Not so that you can stay at home, mind you, come to church, but so that you can be at church. And if the little one's squirrely, maybe you could even walk outside and let them kind of pace around and you can have it on your phone with headphones in or something like that.
Yep.
Right. And you'd be in your own world a little bit more, able to listen to the sermon while managing your kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the point I'm making is it's worth the effort to, for a time, be a bit distracted. I sit up in the front because I'm always having to go up front, you know, during the service. So I don't see a lot. I hear it is pretty entertaining, actually, to be in the back and to be watching all this going on. You sit more in the back. Do you notice that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a challenge.
Uh-huh.
And parents are having to wrestle with their kids, and there's a lot of little things that are going on. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
I think we're so used to it as a church, honestly. I think if there was any adjustment period, it was pretty quick. I think a lot of people are more excited about it than they would be distracted or annoyed by it.
The people who are members of Emmaus who are there, I don't know of anyone who's griping about this.
Right.
That maybe there are, and I don't know about it, but my perception of it is that everyone's all in on this issue.
Yeah.
I guess this podcast is maybe intended more for those who are newer to the church, right, and not quite convinced that this is the thing to do. The last thing I would say on the practical issues is be patient with your kids. There's probably nothing worse than every week getting in the car and ripping their heads off, right? Because of how bad, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. Now, what do they associate church with? Oh yeah, that's where we go to get in trouble, you know, every Sunday. It's where, right? So there needs to be realistic expectations. The kids need to know what's expected of them. There need to be consequences. There has to be parenting and guidance involved, you know, but with patience and in love, you know. It's a process. We all understand that. So be patient with yourself. Be patient with your kids. I mean, my hope is that our kids just love coming to church. It's true of my kids. I'm really pleased with that. They love coming to church. They love hearing that it's Fellowship Meal Sunday, by the way. That's like the
group. Doesn't love to hear that.
Damon will ask about that all month. So, hey, is it Fellowship Meal Sunday? You know, and I think the other kids love it too. I love interacting with them, the little ones, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a joy to me. I just saw two of them uptown today, you know, and they come up and it's just a sweet time.
I think it's easy to forget how little you would see kids if you didn't have them in the service like that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. I feel like I've interacted with so many of the other kids around our church so much more than in the past because of this.
Right.
I think that's a cool thing.
Yeah. I love it when they come up and call me Pastor Joe, you know, with their little squeaky voice, Pastor Joe. One gave me a note the other day. She wasn't able to make it. She was sick, but she sent a note with her mom, you know, and it just had a little memo on there about angels or something like that with a little drawing. And you know, it's like, that's cool, right? That's a cool thing. It's a privilege for a pastor to be able to have that sort of interaction with a child, you know, from a young age on that. Really neat.
Well, a lot of this has been directed towards parents. And what would you say that is something that needs to be said to the church as a whole?
I think it's obvious the entire church needs to be committed to this model, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of involved. Everybody needs to be in agreement that this is super important and that it's worth the effort. It's worth it, you know, to have noises in the service and to have to learn to focus despite of that, despite that. So the whole church needs to be committed. The whole church needs to be patient. The whole church needs to be in prayer about this. And I would really encourage those without children in the home to think about ways that they can support parents.
Yeah.
In this task, you know, being mindful of some of the difficulty. Hey, can I help you out? You got to be careful with that, I guess, you know. But just to be mindful, how can I support this this effort here? And I would just encourage those who are older to engage with those who are younger. And I would encourage the same of the younger people. Engage with the older. So I'm thinking here primarily of middle schoolers, high schoolers who I enjoy meeting with. Go up and talk with adults. You know, about real things. That's the kind of thing we want to see, is that life-to-life, multi-generational interaction going on. But it has to be something that we're intentional about and that we work to facilitate week to week.
Right.
You know?
I mean, that alone by itself is just an awesome thing to work towards, is that more involvement with each other, each member and tender of Emmaus being more involved with each other as families and getting to know each other more. That leads to this kind of thing, encouraging and being able to help with kids and all that stuff. So
yeah,
it's good.
We love it, you know, and we just want to see it continue. And I'm very happy with where the folks who are at Emmaus now are at in regard to it. I'm just, you know, a bit concerned for those who are new to the church that want to provide a rationale to them, and thus this podcast. So praise the Lord. Let's, you know, continue to pray for our children, that they would make a credible profession of faith, that they would grow up in the faith that they've been given since the time that they were young. You know, the Lord has certainly given them a privileged place, and that they are in some way sanctified or set apart. What does that mean? It's not that they are born into salvation or born into the covenant, but what it means is that they're born into a situation where they're in close proximity to the gospel. Mm-hmm. They're in close proximity to the things of God. They have this wonderful privilege of being able to be exposed to all of this from a young age. Why would we take that from them in any form or fashion? You know, I think we need to allow them to reap the full benefits associated with that privileged place they have, because they were born into a family with believing parents, with a believing parent or believing parents.
Well, if you have any other questions in regard to this topic, send us an email, talk to us in church. Again, email staff@emmauscf.org, emmauscf.org. And it would be great to talk about it if there's anything we missed. And so thanks for tuning into this episode, and we'll see you next time. Until then, abide in Christ.